Do not go gentle into that good night. Old age should burn and rave at close of day. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. Though wise men at their end know dark.
We're hearing Dylan Thomas reading his own well-known poem, Do Not Go Gentle Into That Good Night. And it is the last four lines of the poem that playwright Tennessee Williams chose as the epigraph for his intense drama, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. And you, my father, there on the sad height, curse, bless me now, with your fierce tears, I pray, do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the dying of the light.
Do not go gentle into that good night. Grave men near death who see with blinding sight, blind eyes could blaze like meteors and be gay. Rage, rage against the dying of the light.
We're reminded that Big Daddy is the father looming at the brink of death in the play Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, and that Big Daddy's original dreams have been lost or debased on the way to attaining the very wealth that had seemed so essential. Big Daddy's disillusion with the conventional success he pursued so relentlessly throughout his life, and his accommodations to society's mendacious requirements, Big Mama's sad, repressed understanding of her failure to achieve Big Daddy's love or respect, Maggie's similar failure to create a relationship with Brick, even Gooper's failed dream of inheriting the 28,000 acres. These various goals must all be confronted as Big Daddy's death draws closer. Most poignantly, Brick cannot bear to examine either himself or his failed relationship with Skipper. We're told that the words of Dylan Thomas were not Tennessee Williams' first choice to set the tone for the play. He'd actually turned to words of poet William Butler Yeats. And when Cat on a Hot Tin Roof is considered as a meditation on how the changing landscape of the American dream affects masculinity, the structure of the family, and individual lives, Williams' original epigraph from Yeats is profoundly appropriate. In To a Friend Whose Work Has Come to Nothing, that poet advises a friend to adhere to a masculine, chivalric code of conduct, to suffer failure with silent dignity, rather than participate in demeaning public squabbling with a morally unequal foe. Williams used only lines of the Yeats poem for the early drafts of the play, which broadens the meaning. Amid a place of stone, be secret and exult, because of all things known that is most difficult. These relatively obscure lines were replaced, apparently at director Ilya Kazan's urging, with the most famous lines we've just heard from Dylan Thomas's poem. And you, my father, there on the sad height, curse, bless me now with your fierce tears, I pray, do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. Critics have read this exchange as emblematic of Ilya Kazan's redirection of the play's focus from Maggie to Big Daddy. Certainly, the Thomas epigraph overtly, even blatantly, spotlights the father, Big Daddy, and his position on the sad height of life, which is death. However, a closer examination of the Yeats epigraph reveals not so much a focus on Maggie, but a deeper, more ambiguous meditation on the plight of each character in Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. Each has had dreams vanquished and faces the need to go on. Each can be read as inhabiting the place of stone described by Yeats, the bleak, unyielding end of his or her work. Words of Claire Nicolai in Generations of Discontent in Cat on a Hot Tin Roof in the Tennessee Williams Annual Review. This expanded meditation on mortality and dreams and disappointment and love and lying, not just in the life of Big Daddy, but in the lives of all the characters, gives us a sense of the richness and depth of the drama created by Tennessee Williams, opening this weekend at the Little Theater of Wilkes-Barre. And we'll be able to hear the excitement in the voices of the players around our table We had a visit from director Walt Mitchell and actors Joe Sheridan, Carol Wahlick Sweeney, and Angel Berlaine Mulcahy from the Little Theater, known historically for its elaborate productions of musicals. Walt Mitchell.
Several years ago, we started doing classics in this time slot of our season, going all the way back to One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, The Crucible, Hamlet last year, and now Cat on a Hot Tin Roof this year. We're calling it our winter classics. And for the last 2 years and this year, we're bringing in a visiting scholar to comment after the first Sunday afternoon performance. Her name is Annette Sadek, PhD. She's a professor of English and theater at the City University of New York. And probably most importantly to us is on the editorial board of the Tennessee Williams Annual Review. And we really can't wait to hear her take on Tennessee Williams and why she finds him to be such a prolific and interesting playwright on which to comment. But we'd like to know how we do, in her eyes, with this juicy piece of theater. It was actually Tennessee Williams' favorite play. He has admitted on certain occasions that of all the things that he wrote, this is truly his favorite. I don't understand why it would be his favorite. I mean, it only has greed, mendacity, decay, sexual desire, avarice, repression, death, anger, envy, jealousy, emotional distress, deceit. Now, obviously, it's so rich as a body of literature for these professional actors. They're not paid. But when you come and see them on stage, you will see what I mean. They are truly professionals in their craft. And I'm blessed as a director with what I call an embarrassment of riches. I mean, I had to call back two Big Daddies, four Big Mamas, and three Maggies before I could finally make a decision. I could actually have cast the show three times and had three different casts sort of rotating through this play, and all of whom would have done a great job. Angel Berlaine Mulcahy is playing Maggie the Cat. Carol Wahlick Sweeney is Big Mama. And Joe Sheridan is Big Daddy. Not only are they superb actors in their own right, but they also bring the director's point of view and insight. And there are many times when I'll sit back from a scene and I'm not quite sure I know what's going on, and Joe will jump in and say, well, why don't you try this? Or Carol will say, you know, I don't feel right about where I am. Let's move over here. Or Maggie will say, you know, the delivery of this line might come out better like this. It's been an absolute joy. I've cherished every minute of it.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I love Tennessee Williams, and I've directed Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, Streetcar Named Desire, and Glass Menagerie. Those are the three that I really enjoy. I love the multi-levels of character development. He just piles on and piles on and piles on the different motivations for the characters. It gives an actor so many ways of interpreting the person in the show. Also allows the audience member to get a different feel from it. You can go and see Cat on a Hot Tin Roof performed by four different casts, and you get four different feelings and four different slight interpretations as to what exactly is going on what motivations Big Daddy has, or what Brick might have, or what the motivations that, in particular, that Maggie has for a lot of the things that she does, or why Big Mama reacts in the way she does to Big Daddy. I think that's what the charm of it is for people going to see the show, and also what the real charm of it for those of us getting a chance to be being in the show get out of doing it. Your interpretation of the part is so involved with your reaction to the person that you're dealing with. I mean, if I had a different Big Mama than Carol, it might totally change the way I'm interpreting Big Daddy. But with the way she reacts to me, it's really a learning thing. It's not just something that I'm developing my character, she's developing her character. We sort of, you know, blend them. No, we actually have to build them together to make them work together. And it's the way the whole show has worked. And fortunately, we have very, very, very giving actors in this production.
Give us some insight into Big Mama and how you're creating her.
You think of the time period you're in. You have to remember how women were treated in this period of time. And I keep asking myself, well, why would she stay if he's that way with her? Why? But there are many married couples that stay together for a long time that, I mean, it's a different kind of love. And in this particular case, there's a fortune involved. There's someone who's going to inherit, stands to inherit a lot of money and a lot of land. And there's a power struggle. It's a dynasty. You know, we're looking at a dynasty here. We're looking at who is going to rule the dynasty. And backbiting, but he's captured by far not the perfect American family. She's not a June Cleaver, you know? She's the opposite of a June Cleaver. And everybody's kind of out for themselves in this, but we take it, and I always say we peel back the layers. We take the play and we can stretch it in different directions. We'll take a scene. We did this last night. We take a scene and we play it out. And then we're putting the books down now, which means my hands are free. I have an independent activity. I'm always doing something. Maybe I'm painting my nails. Maybe I'm fixing my hair. Maybe I'm fixing something on the couch. But that's when it really comes to life. And when we make the connections, my relationship with Angel's character, with Maggie, the butting in mother-in-law, the nosy mother-in-law, the relationship with the son that's a little bit too close, a little bit like Raymond and his mom, you know, and she's right in there to inspect and investigate. And I want to know everything. A control issue. It's control is what this is about, too.
Maggie, tell us about your character.
Williams is telling us so much about love in so many relationships that we share on stage. You'll see so many dynamics as husband and wife and brother to brother and children to parents, and even in my situation where I'm married into the family. And so we see a lot of heart, and we see how it can affect us daily in our daily lives. And we see how much hurt we all carry, and we see the importance in taking care of relationships. We don't know when our day is going to be here, it's going to be our last. So we try to cherish what we have and we don't throw it away. And we could perhaps fix things right now if it's not too late. And Maggie is trying to restore her relationship with Brick. And she's gripping on anything that she has left, even if that means having a child with a man who's taken to drinking and who doesn't necessarily want that in his life right now. So we see a lot of heart in Maggie. We see the cat in her. We see the fight. She references a lot of times as herself as a cat, and others do as well in the show. And there's so many layers to that and so many different meanings as to why she is a cat. And I've just been truly honored to be able to peel back those layers and really try to figure out how she is handling each character individually, how she handles Big Daddy. She's a little more calculated in her relationship with him and what she says because of what she needs from him. With Brick, she flies off the handle a little bit more because she can. She's married to him. She bears her heart, her soul to him. Big Mama, she is kind of fighting for herself and really wanting to show Big Mama where she belongs in this family. So she's always fighting. There's always a fight, and it can be either calculated or she can really come at you and throw a jab.
Walt, you used the word mendacity, and certainly in the last year we've heard that word and the words lies, liar, lying many times in the country's political discourse. Does this play speak to us today? And if so, how so?
Oh, it absolutely does. I mean, the universal tendency to embellish who we really are for our own personal gain, it just is woven in such a beautiful way through this play. And the fact that it becomes the core reason for Brick's explanation of why he drinks and his disgust with what he sees around him, mendacity. And when Big Daddy reacts to that and says, "Are you kidding? I don't want to take your line, Joe. I've been living a life of mendacity forever. It's a false front. Church? Are you kidding? Lions Club? Forget about it. Everything I'm portraying isn't really I. It's what society thinks I should be. It's the person that I'm really not down inside. I can't stand all this stuff. It's not who I am, and yet we live that way." And every single character in this play has some of that in him or her. Going as far as the preacher, whose excuse for coming to the birthday party is to get some of the money to help build things at the church. Originally, when I read it, I thought the only truly honest person in the cast is Doc Baugh, who is there to try to tell Big Mama that Big Daddy is actually dying, when Big Mama and Big Daddy were the only two who thought that he didn't have cancer. But now I reread it and I think, no, that's not it either. because he's not being honest either, is he? With the very patient that he's holding back information from. So here I thought, well, there's got to be one shining star. There has to be one blameless, flawless character in this play, and there isn't. Even the five kids are rambunctious and out of control. You know, they really are. So I guess we're going to find that forever. Forever.
The truth of the matter is I never had heard the word mendacity used as part of the vernacular until this year. And then I really got a real understanding of it. But I think it's the level of mendacity, how many lies there are set, you know, how much deception there is. And I think what he's trying to show is the levels of lies. And I think it all depends on how they were brought up. This man left school when he was 10 years old to work. What does he know of care and concern and love? He just sees what things should be. And if it means you have to lie to get where you have to be, well, then that's what he did. And that now at 65 years old, with the threat of him having, in his mind, possibly dying and now not dying, this has all gone through his mind. And he's going, wow, he in my mind is the only one who's actually stopping and taking the moment to think through his life and say, what the hell have I done in my life? You know, yes, I've made money. I've done this. But to what end have I like really betrayed myself? You know, I lived with Big Mama for 40 years. I've done this. I've done that. To what end? To what end if this is what there is at the end of my life? And then to find out at the very end, he had the ultimate betrayal by his entire family, except by the one woman, which he really has not been able to tolerate for the last who knows how many years. His wife was the only one who didn't betray him, not because she probably wouldn't have, but she was also betrayed too. He was in the same boat with her. He and she were forced together by the fact that they were both betrayed by everyone else in that family. And it makes us stop and think, like I said, everybody leaving the show is going to go, I don't know what to think. You know what I mean? Which is, wow, a perfect hallmark of a really, truly great playwright.
One thing I think that underlies this, too, is Tennessee Williams was a homosexual and an alcoholic. And those two factors get into a lot of the thread of his work. And no less here, the two people for whom Big Daddy went to work at age 10 were two men who slept together in the same bed. And when one of them died, the other one stopped eating and then also died. And this comes up in a discussion between Brick, whose friend allegedly was a homosexual, but Brick doesn't want to hear anything about that. And we hear at that point the level of tolerance that Big Daddy actually admits to having. And we think that comes from the relationship that he grew up with on this plantation, that he saw this love and devotion between two men and himself realizes there's nothing wrong with this. Why should society reject this? Now, this is back in 1955 that Tennessee Williams is putting his stake in the sand, so to speak, and saying, there's nothing wrong with this, and here's my way of telling you there isn't. But a true appreciation for his own alcoholism is certainly coming through in everything that Brick does. There's nothing that Brick does that isn't real from an alcoholic standpoint. Anyone who has been through alcoholism on his own or in a family of alcoholics, they will all relate to how Brick is coming across as an alcoholic. It's absolutely right on. So those are two themes that come right out of Tennessee Williams' biography.
Tell us about the use of music in the play.
Well, there was actually a love theme for Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, written by Charles Wolcott, not a name familiar to me. And then Andre Previn's Lost in a Summer Night underscored part of the play. Beethoven's Fifth, of course, comes on when everyone's assembling for Big Daddy's birthday party in Brick's room, because Brick has broken his ankle the night before trying to run hurdles while in a, we assume, drunken stupor. And he refuses to move out of his bedroom. So, if that's the case, if Brick won't come to us, we'll all come to him. So the birthday celebration takes place in Maggie and Brick's bedroom. And at one point, Brick goes over because he has no tolerance for the din, the noise around. He just can't stand it. So he goes over and he actually cranks up the radio, and that's the one that comes on. The boom, 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 boom. And Big Daddy says,
shut that damn thing up.
Right, exactly.
You know, the classical music is also a symbolism of the pretense that the entire family always lives under. That they are, I don't want to say, well, they're nouveau riche is what it basically boils down to. You know what I mean? And it is a pretense that the classical music is in the original thought. And I read this somewhere. In the original show, they had black people almost slaves. Okay? I mean, they were the black servants. It was the 50s, and they were singing real heavy down south tunes. And then they mix it with contemporary music, and then the classical music. The classical music was the pretension, the contemporary music was here, and the slave music, shall we say, was a throwback to the South to remind you of where these people are actually coming from.
And whether it's true or not, often in the commentary over the years about Beethoven's Fifth, the opening da-da-da-da has often been described as fate knocking at the door. So look out, Big Daddy.
You can look at this as so many, just from every angle, you can come in at it so many different ways. You know, Carol and I made a conscious decision about, there's a part in the show where after Big Daddy's left, he has a scream of anguish and pain, where he has finally physically acknowledged he's dying of cancer. And in the script, he's to scream. She responds to it. We decided she should respond to it. She says, oh, Big Daddy. So that audience gets to go, is she like still at his side,
he's
even though
alone.
He's been so...
Yeah, he's not alone, maybe.
He's not alone? Did he allow her to come with him? Did she follow him? You know, we're leaving all this up to you to decide, which is so exciting, you know, that he has left us this chance to do this. And we just decided, this is what we're going to do. We're going to give you a chance to make this decision.
Yeah, no, and even despite the fact that he may be somewhat despicable, I might be somewhat despicable, the fact that he's dying still instills in you and pulls on you that you feel sorry for him. And if he dies alone, you know, that's everyone's fear in life is I'm going to die alone. And I think that gives it eases the blow to the audience a little bit. They can leave there maybe hoping that there was another person there to be with him when he experienced this, to maybe finally ease his pain, maybe. Or maybe she's there to make sure he does die. And, you know, so, but let them, they will decide.
Get the option of deciding if there is a plus side to this person, if there's a redeeming quality to Big Mama. Same thing happens with Maggie.
Yeah. And Maggie has that wonderful line in there. She says, two people in the same boat have got to take care of each other. Mm-hmm. And each relationship, you know, what husband and wife relationship in the show, they do that. Even if we think that maybe they're not necessarily right, we're still standing up for our significant other in this show. So I love that. And I love that I think anyone who leaves, they're going to see themselves in each character.
And the fact, not just the good part, you can see the bad parts of you in some of these people, right, without it being disgusting. And you can see the little bit of bad element that, yeah, okay, I've done that too. Maybe not to this extreme, but yeah, okay, I've had that kind of attitude too. Which, you know, let's face it, we all have to be honest with ourselves at times. None of us are perfect, and we have to accept the fact that we all have that little dark side to us. And Tennessee Williams allows you to see, through an over-exaggeration in his characters, that little bit of dark side in each of us.
Forcing us to look at ourselves too,
yeah.
And it's not always pretty.
You're giving us a number of chances to see the show.
We open Friday, February 17th for 3 weekends. And it's Friday and Saturdays at 8, Sunday at 3. Don't forget the first Sunday we have that talk back from our visiting professor. We also have a Meet the Cast reception the first Saturday night after that show in the lobby. You can get tickets by going to ltwb.org or by calling the box office at 570-823-1875.
Director Walt Mitchell, actors Joe Sheridan, Carol Wahlick Sweeney, and Angel Berlaine Mulcahy, speaking with us about Cat on a Hot Tin Roof by Tennessee Williams, opening this weekend at the Little Theater of Wilkes-Barre, running 3 weekends, Fridays and Saturdays at 8 p.m., Sundays at 3 o'clock. And this weekend, there will be a special talkback with Annette Saddick. She is a Tennessee Williams scholar. She's on the English and Theater faculty at the City University of New York. She will be there after the 3 o'clock matinee. And for more information, on the web, ltwb.org, ltwb.org. That's Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, presented by the Little Theater of Wilkes-Barre, 537 North Main Street in Wilkes-Barre. It will run through March 5th, Fridays and Saturdays at 8 p.m., Sundays at 3. For more information, on the web, ltwb.org. The cast and the visitors we had today wanted to make sure that you're aware of all of the wonderful cast members and crew presenting this piece. Actor David Giordano will be Brooke, and there are so many more. That's ltwb.org, ltwb.org.